Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited to announce that we have a special guest with us today. I'd like to welcome Melinda Guyal, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
Thank you, Michael. It's wonderful to be here.
Great. Great to have you on the air. And our topic is open today. We can talk about whatever people want to talk about. Let me give out the toll-free number. In North America, you can reach us at 866-613-1612. Again, that's toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. And the phone lines are open here, and we'd love to talk with you.
Okay. Well, you and I, Michael, were looking very briefly a few minutes ago at that wonderful, I find wonderful, subject of who is it who's believing that that's the person I am? And how does that happen?
Yes.
Where the thoughts that start with I get to be believed as somebody who really is doing all of that.
Right, right. So there I am going along through my day, and some thought comes through that means something about I.
Yes.
And it seems like almost that the purpose, if we could say there is a purpose to that thought, is to confirm that there is an I.
That there is an I, yes.
That there is an I, and this is who I am, and this is what I like, and this is what this means about me.
And this is what I don't like, and, yeah, this is who I'd rather be with and who I'd rather not be with.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. What I'd like to eat and what I'd prefer not to eat.
Right.
And all of those things add up to a great big me.
Right. Right. And what do we get out of that?
A lot of suffering, usually.
Yeah.
Because there I am, having to eat things I don't like, or not getting to eat the things I like, and life is just miserable from that perspective.
As you were talking, I got a sense of, like, a framework sort of being put over life that doesn't really exist and doesn't really fit.
Yeah, and is extremely confining. That image of framework is very nice because it kind of tries to set in cement something that doesn't exist.
Setting in cement something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And always fun to look at that because it is so easy to slide into the belief that I really am this person who has all of these likes and dislikes and needs to control my life so I get what I want and don't get what I don't want.
Right, right. And it's really true that da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes,
always. And it's important that da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yep, yep. And furthermore, I'm right.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Wow, and since we talk so much about ending suffering, perhaps we could, instead of leave people hanging with just the suffering, we could talk a little bit about the practice of going beyond that.
Going beyond having beliefs about right and wrong and I like this and I don't like that. Actually, having beliefs that that really is, really needs to control my life.
Yes.
That if I don't get whatever it is that I want, that somehow I can't be okay.
Right.
And in our process of going beyond that, we discover, have the incredible discovery that I can be okay under all circumstances.
The discovery that I can be okay under all circumstances.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I have to like them.
Yes.
But I can be okay.
And what are some of the ways that we go about approaching this?
Well, would you like to start that list?
Sure. Well, the first thing that comes to mind is is meditation in the sense of sort of just even getting a glimpse that this is going on.
Yes. Yeah. Beginning to have the experience of those voices in my head or thoughts or however we want to look at them aren't necessarily something real, aren't necessarily something that I need to be pushed around by or led around by.
Yes.
Yeah, and sitting in meditation, just watching them is, well, it's been going on for over 2,500 years now, and it seems to be an effective way to to really move toward ending suffering.
Yes.
Move toward not believing them all.
Right, right. So as I'm sitting there in meditation, I'm putting myself in a place that gives me the best opportunity to see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, so, sitting still, sitting quietly, and observing what goes on when we're sitting still and being silent.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So in the practice that we do, the formal sitting meditation is sitting facing a white wall and being as relaxed as we can without falling asleep.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
being relaxed and sitting in a comfortable upright posture.
Yes.
And not falling asleep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we follow the breath, count the breaths, and to me it's a great practice because when I find that I'm no longer counting the breaths, that's my opportunity to see where I am and start again counting the breaths.
Yeah, and to see what it was that pulled me away from just being with my breath.
Yes.
And for most of us, it's going to be thoughts that tend to repeat themselves or have themes.
Yes. So thoughts that tend to repeat themselves or have particular themes that are particularly compelling or real to me.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. It's very much, as we're talking about this, I realize that being at the monastery is another version of the same thing because we live in silence and we walk around doing our tasks, but we don't engage socially as we might when we're not at the monastery.
Yes.
Which provides that silent backdrop to see how here I am working silently on this job with another person, and there are the thoughts that tend to arise when I'm working on jobs with other people. And again, it's that opportunity to become aware of how suffering arises.
Yes, yes. So there at the monastery, in the privileged environment with the silence, you have an opportunity to see those thoughts arise in a way that might be more challenging in the, quote, outside world, where there might be more social conversation going on.
Yeah, we don't, and as you mentioned, the privileged environment, we don't act on, so I might get annoyed by something someone is doing. And I wouldn't act on that. I wouldn't tell them to stop it. I wouldn't do any of those things to change my experience externally. I just get to look at how all of that goes on for me.
Yeah.
And it's really quite wonderful because if I were able to talk, I could just go on believing that it's about the other person. It's harder to do that when you're not engaging in that way.
Yes. Yes. Fascinating.
Yes. Yes, well, eternally.
Yes. Well, Linda, we have a caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Julianne from Maryland. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Julie?
Hello, Melinda. How are you?
Hi. Good. Good to hear from you.
You too. I actually can barely hear you.
Okay. I'll see if I can speak. Does that work a little bit better?
It's tough, but it's really, really hard to hear. But we'll just do our best. Hello?
Okay. I can hear
you. That's better. Hello?
Yes. I think you just tweaked some knobs in the control room there.
Okay. Well, I'll just start. I just was calling to had called in previously and started practicing in about July, And I just wanted to say thank you to everyone at Living Compassion, because the practice is just amazing, and it has completely changed my life. It's just, I can barely describe it, but
wow.
I'm so thrilled to have been exposed to all of this.
Oh, wonderful. Could you say a little bit, if you're willing, about how things have changed for you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a 180-degree turn. I hadn't realized that I was completely, caught up in the voices and mm-hmm. believing them. And I just thought that I had an anxiety disorder, which I guess I did, but this
and
has...
There was probably some therapists out there willing to confirm that for you.
Right,
uh-huh.
right. I've learned how to have a manageable relationship with not really anxiety, but with the voices.
Yeah.
So therefore, I really just don't have the anxiety if I continue to practice. And just the knowledge of the vast knowledge that I have now from all of you, from reading the books and listening to the show, it, just holding that to so dear. Just knowing all of those things in itself is such a comfort. And coming back to everything that you teach, and then, of course, through meditation and yoga, it's just amazing. But
well, and it sounds like you have really been diving in with mm-hmm. a lot of willingness to try the things that are offered and discovering for yourself that they really do work.
Yep. Yeah, without a doubt.
Be in a kind of relationship with the voices where they're not terrifying you, it sounds like.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's beautiful. I mean, it's really beautiful.
It is.
but, of course, I still am new, and I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Where my challenge is, it sort of follows what you and Michael were just talking about. I think, very successful at being present, on my own.
Uh-huh.
But it's harder when I'm in a social situation with other people or even with my husband, I find that I project a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a specific situation that we disagree about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been... I'm not sure if I should just let it go what the situation is, we live in an area where we have a large piece of land, but we're sort of close to one house, and we have some new neighbors who happen to make a great, they're great people, but they make a lot of noise that we didn't used to have, pool parties and radio and that sort of thing. And we really love, listening to the birds and nature and all of that. So it was sort of a sudden change. So my husband wants to move. And I'm thinking, well, I just want to try to get over it.
Get over it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Accept it and learn, kind of use it as spiritual practice. And it's not always noisy, and they're really not even that close to us, but it's just quite different from the way things were when we first lived here.
Yeah, so instead of the birds on some nice evenings or early mornings, you'll get loud neighbors and radios. And
right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So our little peaceful oasis, it seems to have been invaded, so to speak.
Your peaceful oasis has been invaded, yeah. And you, at least part of you, would really like to use this as a spiritual opportunity and see if you can just accept it.
Right.
And your husband says, let's move.
Right. And the other piece of it is that we're adopting in about a year,
mm-hmm.
and I've spent the last period of time, year, 2 years, kind of building our nest and making everything just wonderful here.
Ah.
And I don't want to redo that. I want to focus on our baby
uh-huh.
and not move. And so that's, to me, I guess it's sort of a nesting issue. I I want to be able to focus all of our resources toward the baby and our marriage and our family and not be kind of in tumbles moving. I don't know. So what do you think? Is this, am I making more of this than I should? Or
what have you been looking at for yourself? I mean, I hear the issue is about, I mean, you've really put a lot of effort into making this a home that
right.
will be a nest when the new child arrives.
Right.
And now you're feeling kind of drawn off by the issue of the neighbors, and you really don't want to move.
Right.
Because you have put all this energy into it.
And it's a beautiful, beautiful, I just love it here. I mean, despite this new neighbor thing, I love it here. So I don't really want to move. But I know I'm kind of tying myself to something material, and that's, so I realize I'm,
well, although that sounds a little bit like a judge snuck in there, doesn't it?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That, and the judge is coming in, and maybe you should just, I'm not clear about whether the suggestion or the wanting to just accept it is a feeling of that's the spiritual thing to do, or if you would just really, you have a sense that that's possible for you to just, oh, well, so we've got neighbors that are noisy sometimes.
I think it is possible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but then when something's possible for you, but it's not possible for, you know, your husband, that's where it's complicated.
The person you're living with, because
right.
if it weren't for him, you could just stay there and
right.
not have a problem.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, but he is kind of a critical part of the equation.
right.
Yeah, 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 which makes it really hard.
yeah.
Yeah. And have you come upon possible ways of working with that together?
We could move together.
Uh-huh. That feels like one option, yeah.
Or we could stay and he could be miserable together.
Uh-huh.
So those seem to be the two options.
Yeah, that if you were to stay, he would be miserable.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. That's a hard place to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you obviously are very much committed to the relationship with your husband.
Right, right, absolutely.
And really love the place you're living and really don't want to move.
Right.
Yeah. So how to make it a win-win situation for everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is the real practice opportunity, isn't it? How to have it so that we can be okay.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel that if we were to move, that it's one of those situations where your ego is focused on what's wrong, and in this case, it's the neighbors, you know. And then when we move, well, of course, ego is going to just go to what, you know, something new. And so
mm-hmm.
I think that to go through the all of the, you know, stress of moving is. Isn't really solving anything.
Yeah. So you're
changing.
Feeling we could go ahead.
The variable.
And go through the whole process of moving and resettling, and then what would come up that would be not okay then.
Exactly.
And do you have this conversation with your husband?
I did. Yes.
Uh huh.
I have. In fact, he's sitting here listening to me right now.
Uh-huh.
so.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And how is it to have that conversation?
He feels that he says why should he have to compromise
uh-huh.
and sacrifice his need for tranquility?
Yeah, yeah. So it really feels important to him.
Yes.
To go where there aren't noisy neighbors.
Yeah, yeah. He really has a great need for. Peace and tranquility, and to have a sanctuary to come home to
mm-hmm.
after a stressful day at work.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the two of you have come upon a real kind of a stalemate on this issue.
Yeah.
And how do you deal with stalemates?
I don't know.
How have you dealt with them? I bet you've had it before.
Gosh. You know, that's a good question. I can't think of one off the top of my head. In the past, I've always, I think, given in to things and always been like kind of a pleaser, where I try to do what makes everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's
so
how.
On this one, you're leaning toward. Hey, wait a minute. I don't want to move.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Mhm. This. Yeah.
Mhm. And how is that for you?
To feel this way.
Mhm. To kind of be taking that stand for yourself when you've watched yourself in the past do what feels like making sure everybody else is okay.
Mhm.
Perhaps at your own expense.
Right. It's stressful for me.
Stressful.
I'm just confused.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a really hard place to be. And you can tell that I don't have an answer for you.
True, I know, you're right, there are no answers.
Uh-huh.
So, well, this is how I have been feeling better about it since I started practicing, because this has been an issue for a while, since before July when I ever started this practice.
Oh, this issue has been with you since before July?
Yes.
Ah, and you're feeling better about how you're approaching it?
Yes, because I don't really usually think about it. I just don't think about it anymore, and I enjoy what I have right now, and, you know, don't have to worry about it because we're not moving anytime soon.
Uh-huh.
If we do move, it wouldn't be, you know, for a couple of years.
So it wouldn't be until after the new baby arrives.
Right. Mhm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so lots of time to practice with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mhm. Mhm.
And the practice itself has been very liberating in that I don't feel so tied to things.
Yeah. So it might be if a couple of years down the road that you all make the decision that you are going to move.
Right.
But you know you'll be okay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of the bottom line, isn't it? That
yeah.
I can be okay no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
which is for me, it's just, I just want to applaud because July, that's not a really long time to have been doing this practice.
I know.
And I really hear you that it has made a tremendous difference.
Oh, it's something I've been searching for all my life. It was just amazing the way it was like this group of missing puzzle pieces that all just kind of fit into place. It was
yeah, it all drops in and it all makes sense and
yeah.
I can be okay no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I bet it's rubbing off on the relationship too.
It is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Okay, well, I guess I my ego just still likes to poke in and bring this one up and
Say that one again.
I said my ego just likes to pop in and bring this topic up, and so I'll practice with it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm hearing is that that you're using it as a practice focus when it arises.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so wonderful about practice. There isn't anything that we can't practice with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 It's all an opportunity.
Yes. We call them happy, blessed opportunities at the monastery.
What did you say?
Happy, blessed opportunities.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks very much for calling, Julie.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Julianne. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest today. Melinda Guyal is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California.
Ooh.
We're going to take a quick break now. We have a couple callers on hold, and we'll talk to them as soon as we're back.
Okay, great.
Coming up next on Open Air, in the second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest today, Melinda Guyol, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Thanks for being with us, Melinda.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael.
And we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome John from Los Angeles. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi. Hello. John.
Hi. Hi. This is John.
Yes, I.
Okay, well, I've listened to Sherry's podcasts and tapes over and over for the last year or two, and I've read most of her books, and I never really went on a retreat, but I have been sitting, not as regularly as I like, and I think what prompted me to call was kind of the opening comments about identity, and I'm struggling with this in a way of, like, not having preferences and not projecting and avoiding judgments. And from that point of view, or from that place of being, I don't know. I have a hard time making any decisions because everything seems to be okay with me. All the basics are covered for me. I have good health, food, housing, clothing, everything. You know, things could be better, but things could be a lot worse. And so I'm having trouble making decisions in terms of, like, well, I'm fine here now, so why bother? You know, and I get there's a certain indifference and loss of dreams in a way. Like when I was a kid, I had these hugely ambitious dreams, and those have just faded. And now I'm like, you see, I'm sort of in a place like, what to do? I don't know what to do in a way, or because everything's okay.
So everything's okay except that you don't know what to do.
Well, like I could earn more money. I could move to a fancier place, which seems to be the typical aspirations of our society, but that doesn't matter to me anymore.
And how is where you are now, in the sense of, you know, how your life is going, how is that not okay as it is?
Well, it feels kind of dull. It feels like blasé, and there's a lot of sort of ambivalence about anything, you know, like, okay, well, whoever wins their election tonight, okay, that's all right. And the passions that I used to have many years ago have sort of, like, faded in a way.
Yeah, it sounds like they've almost gone underground. Does it seem like that to you?
Yeah, like, exactly, you know.
Yeah, like being
like
repressed.
I have repressed them to a sense because I have, like, approached things that, you know, with this sort of no preference, no opinion, no projection.
Yeah. Well, you know what might be interesting, John, is to look at, it's kind of where we did start the program, which is to look at how are you getting the information? I'm not sure I'm going to be able to articulate this. Well, we'll see. How are you getting the information that you shouldn't be having preferences? And so what's running the show? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, so who is it that's saying that it's almost like a preference in and of itself, that
exactly
preference for no preference?
Exactly. And it's telling you, it sounds like some not-so-subtle standards have been set about...
Wait, say that again, not-so-subtle what?
Standards.
Blinders?
Standards.
Oh, standards.
Yeah. That there's some standards about how you should be a person with no preferences. You should just accept everything the way it is. And so there's some, it's as though there's some authority in you telling you how things should be, and the rest of you isn't having a very good time with it.
Yeah.
And it's
I condition myself into sort of like a big marshmallow. Kind of.
Yeah, a big marshmallow.
And there's where's the joy of living in just this sort of blasé?
Yeah, that's what kind of flagged me, because when we're able to be in that place where you know, it's okay however things are. There's a lot of joy that goes with that. So if that's not being your experience, it makes me suspicious of who's running your life.
Right. So if I truly, or if I had encompassed these and changed my conditioning such that I was okay with everything, I still would be manifesting and creating a lot in the world and shooting for, I don't know. I mean, it's just on a practical level, like I've been in the same apartment for 10 years. I've driven the car for same car for 10 years, and I could upgrade. I could afford it, but I don't see, you know, I'm just sort of like, why, I don't, I'm like, why bother? That's, I guess that's a question that comes up in my mind a lot.
Yeah, and one of the things that you might want to look at is that when we talk about, you know, these part having preferences and likes and dislikes, the idea is not to get rid of those, but to be aware of them so we see how they cause us to suffer. We see how they might be running our lives in ways that aren't necessarily helpful. Not to get rid of them.
Okay. I think
what
I might have gone too far in that direction.
There's a process that's been going on for you that's been trying to kind of flatline you.
Yeah, flatline is exactly kind of the word, the idea.
Yeah, and no wonder you're not having a good time.
Yeah.
Instead of just, so who is John, and what does he like and what does he not like? And rather than it's not okay to like things and not like things, who is this person?
Right.
What's he made up of? Tell me about his passions. Tell me about his disappointments. Tell me about it, you know, so on and so.
Well, it's and it's sort of what the last caller, you know, talked to with her situation. It's been, you know, she's been, if I remember correctly, not thinking about it, her having to move situation for 4 months
right.
or something.
Now, and if it's not there in my thoughts, it's not a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, I have a similar thing with my career, and I could move, but I'm just, like, I've been thinking about it for literally 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty good on one level, and on other levels, it's like, yeah, it's not ideal. And I guess, you know, I know Sherry has said things like, you know, it's we're concerned with the actual. There's the ideal, and then there's the actual.
Yeah.
And it seems like my complacency, and I've used kind of like the Zen rationale in a way to say, well, I'm just here doing, you know, chopping wood and carrying water.
Yeah.
So how do I motivate myself to go up for like something that's more to my ideal and more to my standards ethically and financially perhaps?
Yeah. Chopping wood and carrying water and having a miserable time is not part of the equation. It's supposed to be chopping wood and carrying water and having a wonderful life.
Okay.
Sounds like that piece is missing.
Yeah.
And I noticed I want to do a little commercial announcement because I've got a way to segue it in here, which is when you first said that you've read a lot of the books and listened to the podcasts but hadn't done any retreats.
No.
There is nothing wrong with your retreat just kind of breaks open people's worlds. And you might want to put that in a little file somewhere to consider.
Yeah, it was one of those. Actually, I had signed up, and then I never, like, by the time I got my act together, it was filled in the opening. But that's something I'd definitely like to do in the short term, near future.
Yeah, well, and I think that it would really assist you to see more of what you're already seeing about how we call it pseudo-Zen here.
Okay.
Has kind of wiggled in and taken a lot of your fun away.
Yeah. Okay, well, that helps a lot.
Okay.
I really appreciate that, Melinda.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, we have another caller.
All right, great.
I'd like to welcome Julie from Palo Alto. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Thank you, Michael and Melinda. Thank you for doing the show today.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Julie, for calling in.
My pleasure. So I have a few questions for you. One that just came up in listening to you speak with John and then the Julianne before him. You talked earlier, I guess, at the beginning of the show about this notion of I and of separateness and how that is in some way an illusion and also a cause for suffering. But then you just spoke with the gentleman before me, and when he mentioned that he wasn't having preferences, you asked him, well, you know, who is John? What does John want? And how do those two things go together?
Oh, really good question. And how would you answer that?
Really good answer, but how would you answer it?
Well, I'm drawing a blank at the moment. So could you say a little bit more?
Sure.
Or just let me reflect it back. So at first we were talking about sort of the illusion of an I.
Right.
And then I talked with John and talked about how, you know, what does John want? What are John's passions?
Right. For there to be a John in desire, isn't that an I kind of state? I mean, if we talk about suffering as arising from attachments to desires,
mm-hmm.
and then we take someone who has gotten to a place where he is okay with everything and he no longer has preferences, How do we then rationalize this notion of no I, no, you know, desires that cause suffering with, as you stated, a preference for having preferences? That I don't know the other way to say it, but
well, the point in that conversation was that there's a process of conditioning that goes on. That is saying, and this happens for a lot of us, so not to single John out, because I think we could say this
sure.
about many of us. There's a process of conditioning that goes on that tells us it's not okay to have preferences.
Uh-huh.
And so we force ourselves not to have preferences. When in fact, if we were able to simply watch the process of having preferences, we would
uh-huh.
learn a whole lot about how it works that we keep ourselves separate, how it works that we believe that somehow we are apart from life and that we can make it happen.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense?
Not fully.
So in that conversation in particular, it's about, wait a minute, it's not really that I'm not having preferences.
Uh-huh.
It's that I'm sitting on a whole bunch of stuff because I think that the good person thing, and this is, again, not about the person we were just talking to.
Right.
It's all of us. The good person thing to do is to not be attached, not have preferences, and just kind of flatline my way through life.
Uh-huh.
And there's a being in life that is not that. That is a conditioned way of being in life.
Uh-huh. So what would the non-conditioned way be in that instance?
And what would you, I really would love to hear what you sense it would be for you.
Hmm. Boy, it's not something I've given a lot of thought to.
But I bet simply because you asked the question, you have a feel for it.
Well, actually, the question really arose from listening to your answer with John, so it really isn't something I've given a lot of thought to, but it just struck me as a curiosity,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
And maybe something that just in my mind I could not make consistent in any way.
Those things together because it sounded like a contradiction.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah.
So I'm still not sure if I understand it, but that's okay.
Okay.
I can live with that. I guess the question I originally had when I called in today, and maybe this actually touches upon what we were just talking about,
uh-huh.
was. What, if anything, is the role of emotion in our practice or in our lives, assuming that we're living in center?
Aha. Uh-huh. And I'm going to once again turn it back on you to ask you what your sense is of that for you.
Well,
what is the role of emotion?
I can only speak from in this instance from an intellectual point of view, I guess. Which is, if I understand that that desires and avoidances or a desire to avoid or desire to have are things that cause us suffering. Or not.
Yeah, although I'd want to add to that the desire to have and to not be okay if I don't have.
Okay.
Because I might, you know, I might want to have, I don't know, chocolate malt.
Uh-huh.
I might really, really want to have one and not be able to. And if I'm miserable because I can't have it, then I'm suffering. If I'm okay not having it, then there's no problem. Or if I'm okay having it. Either way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the desires in and of themselves. We all, you know, I think we're all drawn to things and repelled by things. But if I believe that those make or break my well-being, I'm in trouble.
Okay. So in other words, it's not the desires themselves that cause the suffering. It's not the desire to avoid something or desire to have something that causes suffering. It's the how we feel about not having that, right?
It's hooking my well-being to any of those.
Mm-hmm.
Hooking my okayness.
Okay, that's interesting. So if that were the case, then I guess there's certainly a role for joy and sadness.
Yeah, and the trying to see it as a role, I think, is because joy and sadness just are.
Right, right. I mean, yeah. They can exist, and they're not a... a sign that you know, I just guess I didn't understand the, you know, how desire fits into all of this.
Yeah, because some of the most joyful people I know are people who are coming from center a lot. Or at least that's what I would project. And they can also be deeply sad.
True.
And they don't resist either.
Okay. So the suffering is in resisting the reality that is.
That's certainly my experience.
Okay. So now I have another question for you, if it's okay.
Okay.
Okay. So before stumbling upon Sherry and her teachings and having had the opportunity to do a short workshop with her, and before having had an opportunity to meditate at the Zen Center, I was fortunate enough to have been introduced to meditation through another teacher who practiced the Vipassana, or loving-kindness meditation. And this is really about meditation technique, if I might call it that. I noticed in the Zen Center, we were instructed on how to meditate in that manner, and it involved facing a wall. It involved obviously sitting straight, but also keeping your eyes open a little bit.
Yes.
Right. And in the Vipassana meditation that I learned, your eyes are closed. Does that matter, and if so, why?
What do you see about it?
Well,
now that you
I
have
find
done
it
both, what do you see? What is your experience of sitting with your eyes closed and sitting with your eyes open?
My experience is with sitting with my eyes closed, I'm able to draw my focus and attention a little better than sitting with my eyes open. In part because when my eyes are open, my eyes start sort of bugging out and moving around a lot.
Yes.
And I don't try to control them, but they're just sort of really, really, I don't know how to say it. Yeah.
And have you noticed, and this is kind of a leading question, but have you noticed any correlation between what your eyes are doing and what your mind is doing?
No, I haven't. It's more like a physiological thing with my eyes. You know, I don't know why, but they're I don't know what they're doing.
Well, and you might, just to double check that you're sitting, the guidance is to sit with the eyes at about a 45 degree angle, which is quite downcast.
Right.
So what I'm hearing you describe is something that's easier to have happen when I'm looking straight ahead than when I'm focused down on the floor.
Interesting. For me, it's the opposite. It's the casting my eyes down, and they start sort of, I don't know, crossing and doing all sorts of things.
And how long have you been doing the Zen? How long have you been sitting at the Zen Center?
Well, I've only gone to Zen Center once, but I've been practicing that form of meditation, or trying to, for about a month.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Are you facing a blank wall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. Sounds like it would be something interesting to continue to watch.
Uh-huh.
And we sit with our eyes open because that's the way, one of the reasons is we walk around in life, ideally with our eyes open.
Uh-huh.
And we can sit with the sort of distraction that the stimulation, the extra stimulation provides, and see how we are with that. Become aware of, it sort of expands the possibilities of awareness because we have our eyes open and we have those distractions, but we're sitting silently and can see how those distractions do what they do.
Uh-huh.
And for me, the reason I asked about the correlation between your thoughts and your what you're experiencing with your eyes is, for me, my eyes will move with my thoughts.
Interesting.
So I can be flagged that I've been lost in thought when I find myself, for instance, looking straight ahead.
Uh-huh.
So it's another wonderful reminder, like our counting the breath is, to come back to center, because I've gone off and I have that flu to help me get back to center.
Thank you for explaining those thoughts.
Well, and it'll be interesting. I'd encourage you also to talk about it in group when you're at the groups at the center.
Yes, I appreciate that. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time and for your thoughts.
Well, thanks very much for calling in.
Take care. Bye bye.
Yeah, bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Julie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Melinda, we have about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
And we have one more caller.
All right.
So let's have a quick conversation with George from Pennsylvania.
George from Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, George.
Hi, Melinda. How are you?
I'm all right.
Good. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about self-hate a little bit, because I had a big attack of self-hate last night. It was very interesting to watch what was going on. It was quite something. I do quite well during the daytime, you know, catching self-hate before it pulls me.
So you get to watch the thoughts or the voices start in on some usually
I see them jump on something and here's an opportunity to bring this guy into suffering, and I've been doing quite well with it during the day, but what I've noticed is in my dreams it finds an opening. Last night I had a couple of I think three dreams that I can remember and that I've written down here. I won't go into the details of them, but basically what happened was they were things that happened that were very annoying, very upsetting. And I noticed that what really happened with that energy is that I blamed myself for it. You know, there was something wrong and it was my fault.
So in the dream, you blamed yourself?
Right. So the main theme of all three dreams was there was something happened, something was wrong, and it shouldn't have happened, and it was basically my fault.
And is that a usual waking form of self-hate for you?
Oh, yeah. So in the dream, so I woke up, and I woke up earlier than I wanted to wake up in a state of anxiety from these dreams. In a state of anxiety, feeling terrible. I guess I managed to get back to sleep. I think I had the third dream after I got back to sleep, and then I woke up and I noticed that the anxiety that I was feeling. I mean, the first thing I said was, "Oh, I don't want this."
Yeah.
I don't want this, and I noticed that it was trying to attach to things that were going to be happening during the day.
Uh huh.
That I was starting to get, okay, the anxiety was attaching to something that was going to happen later in the day.
Yeah, so
I noticed that, and I said, I see what self-hate is doing. It's trying to attach itself to my day now.
Yes.
So I was able to see through that and then come back to... Then the next thing that happened was, well, I still had this feeling like, well, I want to get rid of this. I don't want this anxiety. And I said, wait a minute, it's just anxiety. So I was able to accept it and say, oh, this is interesting. You know, this is, I'm having this anxiety right now. I said, what do I want to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
So then I went into a reassurance that I do every morning, and I just laid there and went through this reassurance until it sunk in, sort of, until the reassurance sort of. The energy of the reassurance sort of kind of took over in a way. There was something that happened, you know. There was something that happened, something of depth. And then the anxiety started to kind of shrink away.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're having some really successful use of the tools of practice.
Oh, it's just absolutely amazing. I mean, I was very excited by what happened. And at the same time, very concerned, because this is a time I go through these cycles, or to say I have gone in the past through these cycles of you know, being fine, being, you know, pretty much together, feeling pretty good about myself, about life, and so on, and then going into sliding into a depression and going and staying in that depression trough for a number of months, kind of plodding along and so on.
So the
period of my, you know, non-depression, my feeling good, is kind of that's come to a close chronologically. So now it's naturally.
But that's
karmically, whatever you want to call it, the time to start sliding into this. So so I see self-hate trying to do this.
Yeah.
And I know that. I know that Cherry did something in regard to her struggles with this, which was waking up every 2 hours at night, and going through. And I really wanted to find out more about that, because I feel like I'm, you know, kind of I'm a little concerned about whether I'm going to be able to hold out here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which
and I really do. I don't want to lose my grip here, because. You know what I'm saying.
Well, and what I'm hearing, George, is in a way, if you could let go of that grip, that might be a road to salvation in a way. That it's the grip, it's because in the grip is the information that you're getting that, oh, my God, I'm going to slide into a depression and be in it for months, and I can't stand that thought. I mean, all my language, not yours.
Yeah.
But that very trying to hold on is holding in place the slide, you know, towards the trough.
Right.
So could it be a slide that is just really interesting?
Right.
And paying attention all the way down.
Right. And enjoy the sliding board.
Enjoy the slide.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's easier said than done, but...
Right, but it
could make
doable.
It a lot more interesting than kind of going down kicking and screaming.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And I think we may be just about out of time. Is that so, Michael?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. So I didn't want to wind up cutting you off, George, but
it's no, that's okay. That was helpful. I need to hear that. And thank you, Melinda.
Thanks for calling.
Michael. Yep. Talk to you again soon.
Great. Okay. Thank you,
bye-bye.
George. Bye bye. Melinda.
Yes, Michael.
Thank you so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you for letting me be with you. It's been grand.
It's always a privilege.
And hope to see you before too long.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Melinda.
Bye-bye.
Good night.